Hack the Entrepreneur is part of Rainmaker FM, the digital business podcast network. Find more great shows and education at rainmaker.fm.
Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, welcome to another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. It is so very, very cool of you to join me again today. I'm your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a mom to five boys. She's a networker, recent author, and an entrepreneur. She co-founded Blistem, the single largest international women's small business conference in the world. She also co-founded Blissful Media Group. Prior to this, she was the founder of the magazine for women called Blissfully Domestic. As of this week, she is officially an author with the release of her brand new book called Breaking Busy, How to Find Peace and Purpose in a World of Crazy. Now, let's hack Ali Worthington. Today's episode is brought to you by Hack the Entrepreneur, the book, hack number 49. You don't need permission to be an entrepreneur. When a baby is learning to walk, they constantly fall over, but that doesn't make them stop trying. They don't think, that's it, I'm done with walking, I look stupid, everyone is laughing at me, I guess I'll just crawl from now on. As human beings, we are not naturally afraid of looking stupid or failing. We get educated into it. Steli Efti, founder of Close.io and Elastic Sales. Grab your copy of Hack the Entrepreneur right now at htebook.com or go straight to Amazon and look up Hack the Entrepreneur. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur, and today we have another very, very special guest. Ali, welcome to the show.
Thanks. I'm excited to be here.
Ooh, this is going to be a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
All right, Ali, let's jump into it. Ali, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Well, for me, when I started out as an entrepreneur, I was just so hungry. It was 2007, 2008, that time. I had been a stay-home mom to my kids. My husband and I had spent the last decade living way beyond our needs. We had, massive amounts of debt. We lost everything when everybody else lost everything in the big financial crisis of 2007, 2008. And as we had to rebuild together, I was like, I don't care what business I go onto online. I got to figure out what's going to make money and what's going to make the world a better place. Those two things. We had lived too long just for money alone, but I wanted to figure out how I could support the family, but do it in a way that doesn't take advantage of other people and actually helps people. I think that's been my secret, staying really focused on just the practical goal of making money and balancing that with how do I do it in a way that actually makes the world a better place.
So looking back, do you think your business as it stands today would exist without the financial crisis of 2007-8?
Absolutely not. I would have just been happy raising my children. I never would have had the kick in the pants to even start out as an entrepreneur.
And so you weren't an entrepreneur before?
No.
Mm-mm. Nice. All right. So this is the time that you sort of, I guess, decided to start being the entrepreneur and then the whole making the world a better place. How did you, it's such a tough thing, right? Because obviously, I think especially when we're starting out, we think that it's obviously just easier just to make money, just take.
Right.
So weren't you fearful that maybe it's like, well, maybe at first, because, even people do that with charity and stuff. Well, I'll start giving when I make this much money or when I make this much money, but it's never now. It's always in the future. So didn't you think that maybe, wasn't there something in the back of your head, maybe if I just take a little first, then I can start giving back to the world?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's always a fight. I mean, that's just part of being a human. But for me, at the time frame when I started, I had seen so much greed that got everyone in so much trouble. I just went to go see The Big Short recently. Have you seen it yet?
I haven't.
Okay. It's so great because it's they're feeding you broccoli, but it makes you feel like you're eating cake because they're actually describing what happened. in 2007, 2008. But just living through that collapse of everything and so much greed, it so imprinted on me everything that I didn't want to do. So for me, as I spent time researching, okay, how do I start a business? Where do I want to go? It always kept me focused on the fact that I didn't want to sell my soul in business. So anytime there was a decision to be made, how's this going to affect my family? Is this smart financially? And, you know, does this involve selling out? Those were three key questions I was always asking myself.
Those are three very good questions. And so this researching stage from, say, 2008 and trying to determine what this direction should be, how long was it before you took your first step? And what was that? Like, what did you actually do first?
It happened pretty quickly. In 2008, I met someone through Twitter, as one does back in the day. And she DM'd me and said, hey, I want to host a cocktail party after an event in Nashville. What do you think? And so I said, yeah, because that sounds great. Who doesn't want to do that? Mm-hmm. The event that was supposed to happen that day was canceled. She called and said, I guess we cancel the cocktail party. She lived in New York. And I said, absolutely not. We throw the event. So literally, we had our first conference in 2008 in a bar of an airport hotel. It was so bad. But people loved it. We all came together. We talked about blogging and growing a business. And, you know, there's 100 of us in a bar. We didn't know what we're doing. By 2009, we had 250 people. We had sponsors like Disney and Sony. By 2010, we had a budget of $500,000 and 500 people were coming. So it just grew and grew and grew. But we kept to the principles of bringing great people together, sharing knowledge, and putting people first.
Wow.
And that's how my events business was born.
Oh, I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I love it because that's so not only did this come out of the financial crisis, which ruined so many people, and so many times that causes like defeatism or just like, I can't, like, what's the point of starting something else? It's just going to get destroyed. And then to this idea of a cocktail party that the after a conference that then got canceled, and you still just, no, let's do it. Let's keep going. Because I guess, did you have any idea at that point that you would go from that airport bar to, say, $500,000 budget in 2 years?
I had no idea what I was doing. And I had never been to a conference before. I literally Googled how to have a conference, how to plan it, and then brought in friends who had all spoken at conferences. I mean, literally no clue. My co-founder of my event, she was in the music industry for 20 years. So she knew how to put on a good show. That was her jam. And then my job was culture and content and community. And most of it I Googled. And then just said, you know what? This, everyone loves it. It makes people's lives better. Let's keep going.
Exactly. You'll figure it out as you go.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's how we have to do it. That's awesome. So started out hungry. And that was kind of obviously now as we go through your story, that's obviously what's kind of kept you going and pushed you forward. No matter what kind of a setback, you just stay hungry and keep going.
Right.
So every blog post now, every expert talks about the 80-20 rule. They say, do what you're good at, delegate the rest, right? If you do that 20%, you'll get 80% of the results. Can you, Ali, tell me something that you are absolutely not good at in your business?
Yeah, I'm not good at, it sounds so silly because it's what everybody's doing. I'm not good at content marketing. I am not great at blog posts. You know, the rule that everyone says is you have to blog all the time and you have to create a big following that way. I'm not great at it. I would much rather write a book like I've done than put all those words in a blog for a year. I can't divide up my attention that way. And much to a lot of people's dismay, especially my publisher, I've said, I'm not going to do it. I can't have my own podcast. I can't do blogs. I can't keep up with that amount of energy. I need to conserve the energy for what I do best. And it's made people crazy, but I can't spend my time on it.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
In 2016 now, but even 2015, that was everything. That's all everybody talked about. That's how you get a book deal. That's how you find a publisher, apparently, is how the way.
Yes. Well, you know, it's interesting. And January 2016 now. It has been, my book's coming out. 10 years ago, I was in a bookstore, January of 2006, thinking I want to write a book one day. I didn't know what I wanted to say. You know, it's just that moment that people think to themselves, this is what I want to do. And I went to Google, as everyone does first, and typed in, how do you get a book deal? And the answer was depressing. It was, if you're not famous or infamous or well-connected, it's not happening. I wasn't any of those. And then the next search result was, you can start a blog. And if you have a blog, you can prove to publishers that you have something that you want to say. So my next Google search was, what is a blog? Right? And then that's 2006. So 2007, I ended up actually starting. And I'm a big believer that following the 80-20 rule, if I write a couple of great posts a month, it's going to give me as much success as if I write, you know, 15 half-hearted blog posts a month. I'd rather put all my energy into making one or two that are great than trying to be out there putting out content every day. And, you know, I really think we've reached the saturation point with how much content people can absorb.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And then to get a publishing deal, you actively sought out publishers?
It was, I was at World Domination Summit a few years ago with a friend of mine, and her agent was there, and she was listening to my story, and she said, well, that's a great book. You know, how many books have you written? And I said, none, because I got busy with work, honestly, and forgot about this dream of writing a book. And the agent just kept saying, you really need to write a book. You need to do this. And I had to spend some time and think about, yes, this is my dream, but do I take time away from work? Do I take time away from my family? Is this something that I really want to do right now? And the answer to that ended up obviously being yes.
Nice.
But I had to weigh all the costs of doing it, because I didn't know at the time, but it's not just the cost and time to write a book. I mean, writing a book it's like punching yourself in the nose all the time. It's so hard to do. And then you write it and it's very personal, and I tell people, it's like walking into a crowded room naked and being like, here I am, here's my story. Everyone, you know, leave comments about what you think about my innermost thoughts. I mean, it's not an easy decision to make, put it that way.
And so how did you weigh these costs? Like, are you the kind of person that literally, like, you had a whiteboard, or you had like sheets of paper and you literally like did like pros and cons, or is this something just internal where you kind of just get the feeling?
Yeah, I wish I could say that I did the cost benefit analysis and, you know, was all Jim Collins about it, but no, it was just laying in bed staring at my ceiling going, am I ready for this? All right, you know, it's that sort of thing. Cuz it's one of those things you kind of know in your gut.
Yeah. But there's a cost, as in you were probably already busy with your business, and now you're going to do something that is going to take a lot of time, effort, energy, both mental and physical.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I spent 6 or 7 months, and all I did all day every Saturday and half the day Sunday was write, because my week was already full. So there was my two oldest boys are in high school and they play basketball, and there were many Saturdays where I would find some closed high school cafeteria and have to go in there and write the book while the boys were practicing for their games, and then go watch the game. And, you know, I had to fit it in where I could, because I just don't have a ton of extra time.
Right. And now that you've written the book, how do you feel about it?
I love it.
Nice.
I mean, authors are supposed to be like, I hope it does really well. I love it. I think it's an amazing book. I can't wait for the whole world to read it. But at the same time, it is that feeling of walking in a crowded room naked and then being like, everyone, prepare to tell me what you think of my thoughts and post them anonymously on the internet. This is going to be fun, you know? So it's like I've birthed this child. I think it's the prettiest child in the world, and everyone's going to love it. But at the same time, it's terrifying.
Yeah, well, that's why I was wondering, like, I didn't mean to like put you on the spot. I just,
now
that there's the sort of lull between like when the world actually sees it all and when you've finished it, and you have walked into that room and you're just standing there waiting for everyone to turn around.
Yes.
You can start to second guess yourself. You can start to question, like, should I have done this? Or else you can also be like, yes, this is it. I'm so happy about this.
Yeah. And interesting enough, it's both of those feelings at the exact same time.
Wow. Nice. That's cool. And do you feel something that authors get, I think, sometimes is as soon as they finish that book, all of a sudden they want to start another one?
Yes. I'm already slated to start writing in March.
Really?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. I want to give myself more months to write it next time instead of killing myself, just trying to stay sane. The last book I wrote in about 6 months. This next one, I want to take 9 months to really, really go over it.
Wow. Nice. Mm-hmm. And so how did you determine what the next book should be already before this book's even done its thing?
It just came to me. What I want to teach and what I want to share, I have a great idea for what it is, but I don't know how to wrap it yet. This is what's hard. Like, my Breaking Busy is about busyness, but the thing is, it's not just about time management. That's one chapter in a book that has a greater scope. I mean, if time management was just the issue with busyness, then there's been a million books written about it, right? We wouldn't all still be busy. Busyness is more about how we think of ourselves, our mindset, why we keep saying yes to things that we know we don't want to do, right? So for the next book, I know the concept I want to teach, but I have to figure out how to put it in a package that's digestible. You know, it's kind of like I was talking about The Big Short. They're serving up broccoli of the financial crisis, but you're like, this cake is delicious. So I have to figure out how to take my broccoli and serve it up like it's cake. That's my process.
Nice. I love it. So I love that you wrote Breaking Busy on the weekends because your weeks were so full of your actual business.
Yeah.
Because it's true. We have a lot to do, right? And you have a lot of things you want to accomplish, a lot of people you want to make their lives better and help. So could you now, this book is done and you are starting another book in March, except you're going to take 9 months this time, but your business is going to be growing at this time because of the first book. And you are going to have a lot of things to do. You're still a mother to five children.
Well, and this is the real point. A few people who've read it early have said, I really like it that you're not telling people to be minimalist. Like, you're not telling people to slow down. And I'm like, absolutely not. I think we all should live full lives and go for it and just live the most amazing life possible. We just need to break out of all the busyness that's just making us frazzled and miserable, right? Like, we could fill up our time and do awesome things all day long and be happy, but busyness, that's the stuff that just sucks the life out of you. So this book is just about getting rid of all of that garbage.
Yeah, no, and I love that about it too, because it's true. I want to do as much as possible. I just want to do things that make me happy and make the world a better place too. I don't want to just go somewhere and sit and do nothing in that hole. There's enough of those books about that stuff.
Yeah, and it's just not going to work. I actually wrote at one point in one chapter, you know, I'm not saying we should all become Amish. And my publisher was like, ooh, let's not insult Amish people. And I was like, I don't think Amish people are my target market, but all right, you know.
Hit a soft spot there. So with this, with taking on these big projects, with running a growing business, with being a mother to five children and wanting to do many, many things and help many, many people along the way, let's go to a work day, which seems to be almost every day for you.
Yeah.
Which is totally cool. But
only in writing season. Only in
exactly.
Writing. Yeah.
But so let's say just a regular Monday to Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Can we walk through, say, like your morning routine, whether that's 30 minutes or 60 minutes after waking up? Sort of what you do to set yourself up to get the things done that you need to get done today.
Oh, absolutely. First thing is get the kids out the door. My husband is a stay-home dad. So he manages, like, I like to call the boys in the morning, like a herd of sleepy buffalo. He manages getting the buffalo out the door. So I'm there giving a hug and a kiss and slap on the back to all the guys. And then it goes straight into coffee. And reading time, I read for 30 minutes. I journal. I always pray, always read the Bible, and then spend about 15 minutes listening to music. Music is key for me. I listen to music all day long when I'm working, but I like to focus in for about 15 minutes and just really listen and relax or get myself pumped up for the day. And then I get started in the home office and work until about 5 o'clock every day, like clockwork.
Nice. Mm-hmm. I love it. And how do you determine what needs to get done today once you get to the home office? Is that something you kind of plan out like a week in advance, a month in advance, or just take it as it comes?
Well, I live through Basecamp. Everything is Basecamped for me. So I always have monthly to-dos, weekly to-dos, daily to-dos that I'm constantly staying on time of. I believe if things don't have a due date, they never get done. So I will go through at the end. So say it's Monday afternoon at 4:30. I'm picking out the three most important things that I need to get done for Tuesday and writing those down. And so Tuesday morning when I hit the ground running, I'm just focused on three things that are most important because, as you know, a million things are going to pop up that could take our attention. You know, it's the tyranny of the urgent. We have all these urgent small things coming at us that need to get done but aren't really important. So by having just three key things every day that I focus on that I have to get finished, it can keep all those millions of other little things that can distract me at bay until I get the three most important things done.
Nice. So not the one thing, it's the three most important things.
Yeah, three.
And with Basecamp, does this mean that do you have assistants or people working with you on this?
Oh yeah, I have a whole team. So I am sometimes assigning to-dos at midnight, which drives people crazy.
So you would consider yourself a good delegator?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's a hard won battle because it's always easier to do it yourself and burn yourself out and make everyone else around you miserable. But I would rather things be done at 85%, but actually be done and for me not to be crazy.
Nice. And so something comes across your email inbox or your Basecamp, I guess, say tonight, and this is like the midnight and you are delegating a task out. Are you like the person who needs to have like a SOP sort of created and like a list of here's exactly how to do it? Or is it kind of just like you have employees and assistants that you trust and that you know will kind of just be able to take it and run with it?
Well, the training period is everything. So the more tedious training work you do in the beginning where you're setting up systems and processes and it's so simple because I'm big on screenshots and step-by-step and then this. The more work you do in the beginning, the more you can trust people long-term. The worst thing you can do is to be a little bit hands-off in the beginning and just let people figure it out because then they're never going to live up to your expectations and everyone's going to be frustrated.
Yeah, that's smart. I like that. I love how you have the 80%. I'd rather have it 85% and done than 100% and not done.
Yeah, and 100% miserable, honestly.
Oh, and miserable. That's true. And that's what so many of us struggle with, right? And I think that's why you've gotten to where you've gotten at this point because you've, I think, learned to just kind of accept that and run with it. So, Allie, this has been a blast. And I want to end with one final question. It's this idea I'm working with calling the entrepreneurial gap. So it's this gap that I feel sometimes we live in as entrepreneurs, as dreamers, as someone who wants to help other people and make the world a better place, as you said. We are always looking ahead, which we have to, and setting goals into the future. But we're also setting our success, I think, always into the future. So whether it's like 20 days from now when your book launches, your first book that this was your lifelong goal, but you're already working on the next one starting in March. So whether it's that or whether it's a 6-month, say, revenue goal or when you get to do this certain conference or whenever it's always in the future. And before we get to those things, like before we get to this book launch, we always set a bigger, loftier goal into the future. And so we end up sometimes in this place where we're never quite satisfied or never quite successful. So I would love, Allie, if you could right now stop, look behind you at where you've come from since 2007, 2008 till right now. And tell me how you feel about your journey up until this point.
Wow, that's such a great question. The one word would have to be grateful. When I still at times struggle with anxiety because I feel like I'm not where I could be. I'm not where I want to be. I sometimes feel anxious because, you know, what if I'm not doing as good a job as I could? These things that we all feel as humans. And one night I was tucking my three little kids in bed, and I have this routine with them where I say, hey, what are three things today that made you feel grateful? Because I'm trying to teach them to be grateful. And I was so struck at that moment, this one night, because I realized I don't practice the same discipline of gratitude, and it's why I'm so anxious. It's why I can't enjoy my success. It's why every day I want to work harder and harder, but I never stop to celebrate. And that was my moment of realizing that gratitude was the answer to all my anxiety. So when I look back over all these years, I'm grateful for the opportunities that have been put in front of me. I'm grateful that I was able to rise to the challenge. I'm grateful for all the people that came along on this journey with me. People who loved me enough to tell me when I was being a jerk. People who loved me enough to tell me what I didn't know. People who loved me enough just to tell me to keep going. So the one thing would be gratefulness, absolutely.
That's awesome. I love it. I love it. Well, Allie, I think you have a lot to be grateful for. And so I'm glad you do take that time and also with your kids. So we've got to talk about your new book in passing and your business in passing. Could you specifically tell the listener about your new book that's coming out and just about your business?
Oh, yeah. I do business coaching and consulting, as well as serve as the executive director of a nonprofit called Propel Women. My book, which I hope everybody gets because I think it's amazing and because I'm waiting for everyone to comment on my vulnerability, is called Breaking Busy. And you can find out more at breakingbusy.com. And if you want to connect with me on Twitter, I am Allie. So it's just at Alli. And I would love to connect with everybody there.
Yeah, I have to say that that's the coolest Twitter handle ever.
Well, you know, it's great. However, kids don't know how to tweet. So they will tweet like at Allie.so-and-so or at Allie space something. So I see all these teenagers tweeting to each other. And sometimes I want to be like, do you talk to your mother with that mouth? Goodness. Like, so there's a blessing and a curse of a one name Twitter handle. I'll tell you that.
I never thought of it that way. That's awesome. So AllieWorthington.com is the website, at Allie on Twitter, if you would like to tell her that you heard her on the show and what you've learned from her. And BreakingBusy.com. I had the privilege of getting an early copy, and the book is definitely something that everyone should check out because it's we're all trying to do work that matters, and the book will definitely help you. Comes out January 26th, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Excellent. Excellent. All right, Allie, thank you again so much for taking the time to join me today. And please just keep doing what you're doing because it is awesome and inspiring to watch.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on the show.
My pleasure. Well, that was a lot of fun. I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. And as I said at the beginning, Allie's book just came out. On the release of this, it came out 2 days prior, and it's called Breaking Busy. And I love the idea. I hate the idea of being busy, quote unquote busy, because we all have a ton of things to do. Allie has five boys. Five. I have one daughter, and it like boggles my mind. So five, and she still runs a business and wrote a book and does many, many things that she wants to do that are meaningful to her and to the people around her. But before we get too far, let's go back in this conversation because we hit on some really interesting points. We hit on some cool topics. I had to go back and listen to it. And when I went back, there was four things I wanted to listen to. Then I listened again and I got down to two. But then there was this one thing that each time I listened to it just really stood out to me. That one thing that Allie said. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
I had no idea what I was doing. And I had never been to a conference before. I literally Googled how to have a conference, how to plan it, and then brought in friends who had all spoken at conferences. I mean, literally, no clue. My co-founder of my event, she was in the music industry for 20 years, so she knew how to put on a good show. That was her jam. And then my job was culture and content and community, and most of it I Googled.
And that's the hack. Ali, I absolutely love this. This goes well with your book. Lots of people have this excuse of being too busy to do the work that matters and the work that they want to do. A lot of people also use the excuse of, how could I possibly do X if I've never done X? Nobody was ever born doing, if X is starting a conference, if X is starting a podcast, if X is creating your first piece of software, if you've never done it before, please don't think that somebody was somehow born doing that. Somebody wasn't born building software. But it's the simplest thing, right? What happens when your computer doesn't quite work properly? What happens when your TV is doing something wrong? What happens when you don't remember exactly how to make a certain recipe? You Google it. I know it sounds simple, but it really is. There's people who write posts about everything that they've ever done in their businesses, and you can learn these things. This is how you do it. And it really takes a certain amount of confidence. So she not only had never put on a conference, but Ali had also never been to a conference, but it never stopped her. So she did something that's really, really, really smart. Not just being confident enough and Googling it. That's one thing. But what did she do? She got a co-founder. She brought in like friends and people who had experience in different aspects of this. And her idea brought with other people. That's brilliant. That's brilliant. Please don't think when you come up with an idea and you can't do it, but you know people that maybe could get it done with you. Please don't have that mindset where, but then I got to give away part of the money that's made or part of the business. Just please always think that you would rather have a small piece of something really big and something that actually exists than the whole piece of something that might never get out of your head and something that might never actually exist in the real world. That's so, so important. You can go on and create more, better, bigger things, but really get people around you, build a team, just really encourage. This is why I want you to learn how to sell and sell your ideas to people, because this is how ideas get created. This is how things end up being just ideas and being real and existing in the real world. So I love the confidence of this, Ali, and I love the simplicity. There's no excuse to not do these things. The only excuse is that you don't want to figure out how to do it and you don't want to possibly do something wrong, but that's just how it works. Ali, thank you so much. I really, 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 truly do appreciate it. All right. Well, that was another fun episode. I thought it was fun. I can say that, right? Why don't you drop me an email or hit me on Twitter? I'm John Nastor on Twitter, or John. Spell it any way you want. Well, not any way you want. There's two ways to spell John. Spell it any way you want, at hacktheentrepreneur.com. It's my email. I would love to hear from you. Let me know what you think of the show. Let me know if you'd like to hear something else. I don't know. I don't know how I'll change it, but that's besides the point. Well, that was a lot of fun. Now we reach the point in the show where I thank you for stopping by. I thank you for taking the time to join me here today. And where I also ask you, if you are on an Android device, if you are on an iPhone, if you could go to either iTunes or Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts from, and leave a rating and a review for the show. It helps so, so very much. It takes like 2 or 3 minutes. If you are on an iPhone right now listening, try something really cool. Go to your browser and go hacktheentrepreneur.com/review. It's a magical link. That's a magical link. Sorry, Android, it doesn't work on iPhones. And I totally get the reason why you don't like iPhones. But that only works. That goes to iTunes. So I guess it worked on an Android device if you are using iTunes still to get your podcast, which would be really weird. But hacktheentrepreneur.com/review would take you there. And you can leave a review so quickly. It'll take like 2 minutes and I think 12 seconds last time I timed it. But it really does, truly. Even if it takes you 5 minutes, it would really, 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 truly help. And I would thank you so much. Again, leave me your Twitter handle on there if you can. And I'd love to go on Twitter and thank you personally for that review. But that's about it for now. I really do appreciate you stopping by. Thank you so much. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.